So with Chumash Bamidbar, we open the countings of Bnei Yisrael. And there's a very interesting medrash with regards to the opening mitzvah, which is to count Bnei Yisrael. For the way that the Torah phrases it in Pasuk Beis is Se'u Es Rosh Kol Adas Bnei Yisrael L'mishpachosam L'veis Avos. Literally, the word Se'u means to raise up. We understand that it means to take a tally. But the Medrash does comment that the word Se'u seems to have been chosen, of course, with great precision. And these are the words of the Medrash, quoted by the Ramban. Ramban actually had it in his version of Rashi. In our versions of Rashi, we don't have it. But in any case, it is in the Bamidbar Rabbah. And it says as follows. My dichtiv, what is written, Barosh HaSefer, Se'u Es Rosh, raise the head, Romamu Es Rosh, or Gadlu Es Rosh, Lo Ne'emar. The Torah doesn't use an expression of raising up per se, or enlarging, but rather specifically, Ela Se'u Es Rosh. What is the specific connotation of the word Se'u? Ka'odam She'omer Le'kostina. Like one who would say to an executioner, Sav Reshe Deplan. Take the head of Ploni. What does this mean? The word Se'u Es Rosh, to raise the head, it sounds like it could have a positive connotation. If your head is raised, it's good. Provided that the rest of you is raised with it. Otherwise, it could turn out badly. Actually, we have both expressions used in close proximity to each other when Yosef interprets the dreams of the Sarah Mashkim and the Sarah Ophim. For both of theirs, heads were raised, in a sense, but the expression used is, well, with regard to the Sarah Mashkim, it says, Yisa paro es roshecha, the Sarah Mashkim, he will raise your head, veheshivecha al konecha, and return you to your original place. So that's very good. That said, when it comes to the Sarah Ophim, the Pasuk says, Yisa paro es roshecha me'alecha, he will raise your head up from you, v'tala oscha ala eitz. So the word Se'u, Nesias Rosh, can go either way. It can be positive or negative. And why are we being told this here? What does this have to do with the counting of the Bnei Yisrael? In what way could it be positive or negative? Well, positive, of course, could always be positive. The Jewish people are counted. It's a wonderful thing. But it could end up being negative as well. And not only could it, but it did. Because there's a very tragic irony in the count of the Bnei Yisrael, for this census actually represented exactly the group of people who would not enter Eretz Yisrael. For subsequently, in the Chet of the Meraglim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, everyone who has been counted will not enter Eretz Yisrael. So it turns out that the counting marked them for something that ended up quite negatively. And these are the two possibilities of the positive Se'u and the negative Se'u. That's what the Medrash is saying. That said, we still need to understand, even if the word Se'u is a double-edged expression, could be positive, could be negative, why do we need to be told at this early stage that there is possibly a very negative connotation? After all, our approach normally is, we don't trouble trouble until it troubles us. Do we need to know at the earliest possible juncture that this count could actually be a very negative thing, a tragic thing? When tragedy happens, if it happens, so let it happen then. Why do we need to be conscious of it from as early as possible? Why embed the negative connotation when it doesn't have to be negative at all? Leave it as neutral, or if anything, positive. And this question is raised by the Ksav Sofer. And his answer, I think, is very profound. The Ksav Sofer says that the failing of the Jewish people in Chumash Bamidbar is the sin of the Meraglim. And if we read Parsha Shalach, and we do every year, it's very difficult to hear the things that they are saying. We can't go in, Chazako Mimenu, he's too strong for us, we'll never work. I mean, of course, we're not there, so it's easy for us to judge from the side, especially with hindsight. We know what the correct answer is. But even so, the Jewish people have witnessed the miracles of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's very difficult for us to fathom how they can have thought that anything couldn't happen. It won't work. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with you, of course it will work. So where is all of this pessimism coming from? And they were locked into it. So the Ksav Sofer says, the truth is, it's not that difficult to understand. Because as much as it may be the case that whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to do, he'll do. And if he wants to bring them in, he'll bring them in. There's no question about that. The only question is, does he want to bring them in? If he's with the Bnei Yisrael, there's nothing they can't do. But the question is he with Bnei Yisrael? Now, what is behind that question? Well, the Jewish people, at a certain point, sometimes the timing is bad, but the idea is correct. They take a cheshbon nefesh. They take stock of their performance. Now, the Jewish people must know, and they cannot avoid the fact, that they have made serious errors. First and foremost amongst them, Chet HaEgel. So it's clear to them that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has tied his connection with them to their level of behavior. So when the Jewish people are looking back and seeing, well, how have we performed? And if they performed dismally, then what reason do they have to expect HaKadosh Baruch Hu to come through for them? And if he's not with them, they don't have a chance. So, to understand the Bnei Yisrael is not that difficult. The question is, why is what they're saying not true? The answer, says Ksav Sofer, is self-doubt is one thing. If you're not sure whether God likes you, that's one thing. And maybe you're right to have self-doubt. But if you haven't been up to par, and God tells you that he likes you anyway, and you persist in doubting, that's something sinister. Because it is no longer even the righteous aspect of self-doubt. Because God himself has told you, you're okay. He's okay with you. And if you still say, no, I'm not okay, even though God tell me I'm okay, that's already something problematic. So where has God told the Jewish people that they're okay? The answer is in the first Rashi of Chumash Bamidbar. For Rashi states, as we're introducing the counting, Mitoch chibosom lefonov, out of his love for Bnei Yisrael, Mona osom kol shah, he counts them the whole time. He counted them when they left Mitzrayim, he counted them even when they fell in the eagle, and now he's counting them again, which means you just now received a ishur from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you're okay, and he still loves you. Once that's true, so you, in a sense, you no longer have the option of self-doubt. It's no longer considered to be a righteous thing. It's actually considered to be seditious. So what's very interesting, and this is a bit of an irony, but a show of affection from HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings with it a certain responsibility. Because if he tells you that you're okay, then you can't afford to think that you're not okay, with the abdication that goes with it. And so we see that embedded within the original su'u means raise them up. And it doesn't have to be anything other than positive. But the very raising up could become negative, because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu raised you up and still you stay where you were, refusing to be raised up with all that goes with that, then that could actually lead to the disaster that was the miraculous. And that is why the Medrash alerts us to the negative tragic consequences, because they may actually stem from the count itself. And I believe that's a very important lesson for any...
They may actually stem from the count itself?
Yes. For reasons that we said. Having received the message from the count that God thinks they're okay, and they still think they're not okay, that becomes a sin.
Oh, it becomes.
So these are the comments of the Ksav Sofer with regards to this very interesting Midrash. Now, if we look at the count itself, and let's proceed, we'll be following Rashi with his Meforshim this evening, largely. Pasuk Beis reads, Su'u es rosh kol adas b'dei Yisrael l'mishpachosam. Raise up the heads, take the tally of the heads of B'nai Yisrael, l'mishpachosam, l'veis avosam, in their tribes. B'mispar shemos, the number of names. Kol zachar l'gulgolosam, each male l'gulgolosam. Now, gulgoles, as we know, is a head count. Literally, galgal, the skull is round, and gulgoles is a head count. And that's what seems to be referred to here. Kol zachar l'gulgolosam. Now, as soon as we hear these words, every head counted, kol zachar l'gulgolosam, we instantly are mindful of the fact that that's actually not the way Jewish people are traditionally counted. Because we've already been told in Parshas Kisisa that you don't count directly, but rather always through something else. And if that's the case, then what are we to make of the pasuk here, which seems to be saying, well, kol zachar l'gulgolosam, count each person direct, it seems. Well, if we look at Rashi, Rashi comments. And Rashi says, l'gulgolosam, al yedei shekalim, through the agency of shekalim, bekal gulgoles, half per person. So it's interesting because Rashi is reassuring us here that as much as the pasuk seems to be saying count them direct, says Rashi, but it's not direct because they're really counted through the Matzis HaShekel. Now, the question is, what exactly is Rashi doing with this comment? We have to try and be precise, for it seems to be a bit of an unusual Rashi. Rashi's job is normally to explain the pasuk to me. The pasuk itself couldn't be clearer. The pasuk says, count the heads. Rashi says, that's not exactly what happened. So it seems that Rashi's doing something a little bit unusual. For here, Rashi isn't explaining to me what the pasuk is saying. Rashi is telling me what happened in spite of what the pasuk seems to be saying. That's rather a departure for Rashi. But that said, and by the way, should we ask the question, well, how does Rashi know? Well, the answer, says the Mizrahi in the Gur Aryeh, is because the Torah said it in Parshas Kisiso. So in other words, what Rashi's doing here is not so much locally explaining the pasuk, but rather, we would say, networking the pasuk in terms of what we already know about this type of mitzvah. And don't forget the beginning of Parshas Kisisa, which says, don't count direct, and that will give you to understand that the Torah doesn't need to reiterate and repeat every single time, not the count directly, even though a great deal of space is actually devoted to the count. And there are dozens of psukim about the count, and not a word about whether it was done directly or indirectly, says Rashi, that we've already been told in the beginning of Kisisa. And in fact, the word Kisisa itself means, the word ki means when, in the sense of whenever. Kisisa es rosh b'nei Yisrael means that you are told at the beginning of Kisisa that whenever you count the b'nei Yisrael, it shall be done through the Matzis HaShekel. So that is to be applied in each case as applicable. And therefore, we would characterize this unusual comment of Rashi as Yilmod Sosum Min HaMefurash. That which the Pasuk didn't specify here, it's already said explicitly elsewhere, and the rest is up to us. So say the Mizrahi and the Gur Aryeh. What's most interesting is, according to another of the great Mefarshi Rashi, the Maskil Ladovid, Rabbi David Pardo, Rashi's basis for his comment that the count was done here through the Matzis HaShekel is the pasuk itself. Rashi is responding to a pshat issue in Bamidbar Perek Aleph Pasuk Beis, our pasuk. And to understand why, let's read again and try and translate as literally as we can. The pasuk concludes, "V'mispar shemos kol zachar each male legulgalosam." How would you translate the word legulgalosam? Well, lamed, as we know, can mean a number of things. It could mean two or four. None of them really seem to fit, because none of them really seem to be describing account itself. If we would, no one's asked us, but if we would imagine what the pasuk is saying, would have said, if it's a direct count, it would have said, says Maskila David, kol zachar bigul golosam. Everyone is counted via their head. It's a head count. Or actually, maybe even more compactly, gulgoles kol zachar, which is to count the heads. So it's either to count the heads or to count each person through their head, but not to count each person for their heads. That's an interesting he'ara. What then is the connotation of legulgolosam? The lamid means bishvil, something for their heads. That is to say, the pasuk is telling you, with just this one letter, that you don't count their heads. You count something else which represents their heads. That's something else. That's the machtas hasheka. That's very good. And what's interesting is, says the Maskila David, it's most fascinating to see how Rashi concludes. It's a short Rashi, so we have to make sure we don't miss anything. Rashi says, on the word ligulgosam, al yidei shekalim, through the agency of shekalim, beka lagulgoles, half a shekel for each person. Now, what's interesting is, how much did Rashi need to say? It's only five words, but let's try and be machmir. How much did Rashi need to say in order to alert me to what's going on? Do we count direct or through Matas HaShekel? Says Rashi, through Shekalim. How much? That's already information. I mean, that's or that much I could already know from elsewhere in the Torah. We should know, by the way, the counting, which is stam interesting, the counting on subsequent occasions doesn't even need to use the Matas HaShekel. It's only the original counting of Bnei Yisrael that needs to use the Machtas HaShekel, because there was, so to speak, a coincidence of the yearly collection of the Machtas HaShekel with the count of the Bnei Yisrael for the Mishkan. So if you're going to count them through something else, on that original count, use the Machtas HaShekel, which is coming in now. The two colluded. But really, they don't share the same destiny. Ledoros, if you count, you just have to count through something else. It doesn't have to be the Machtas HaShekel. And by the same token, pardon the expression, on a yearly basis, you need to collect the Machtas HaShekel even if you're not conducting a census. I mean, these are two separate things. They happen to coincide at that time. So it's most interesting that Rashi says that when it says Lugogoles, it doesn't mean directly, but indirectly. And Rashi told us what we're using. How does Rashi know that? How does Rashi know that the device that we're using is the Machtas HaShekel? So why does Rashi feel it necessary to volunteer this further information? You know what that agency is? Bekalagogoles. Half a shekel. And if it's not a half a shekel, I mean, we're clear. We understand. It just means that it's indirect. But Rashi does tell me that it's bekalagogoles. And that's another interesting question. If someone were to ask you the question as to what was originally used to count the Bnei Yisrael, I think most of us would use a much more familiar expression called Machtas HaShekel. That's how the Torah refers to it in Parshas Kisisa. Ze yitnu. This is what they should give. Machtas HaShekel. The expression Bekalagulgoles is much more rarefied. It's not used in the Parshas Kisisa. It actually isn't used until the Pasuk, so to speak, goes back over again in Parshas Pikudei, just to let you know all the money that was counted, this amount of Shekalim, Bekalagulgoles. And that's a good shaila. Because of all the ways for Rashi to refer to the half a shekel, why would he leave aside the more generally used expression, Machtas HaShekel, which says it all, and go for the more rarefied expression of Bekalagulgoles? The answer
is the same thing.
It's the same thing? The answer, says the Maskil David, is Rashi uses the expression Bekalagulgoles because he wants you to know what the Torah means when it uses the word Legulgulosam. That's where it all started. With the fact that the Torah doesn't say Begulgulosam, but Legulgulosam, because Bekalagulgoles is where you see the Torah use the coin Legulgoles. That gives you the understanding that Legulgulosam means through something else. So it's quite different than the Mizrahi, because according to the Mizrahi, Rashi mentions the expression Bekalagulgoles just to ensure that we know the information as to what was used. for the muscular David, it's not about information, it's about being miyashiv, the syntax of the pasuk. That lugugulosam is well understood as beka lugugulosam. Okay, so that's a machlokas now within the Meforshi Rashi. What moved Rashi to say what he said? But he said it. Interestingly, we have quite a different approach from the Abarbanel. The Abarbanel, in his parish to the Torah here, he looks at the word lugugulosam. He doesn't make an issue out of the lamed, and as far as the Abarbanel is concerned, the Torah said nothing other than count the heads, and apparently that's what happened. Lugugulosa means count the heads. Now, we, of course, have religious issues with this, because we already know that when you count the Jewish people, you can't count them directly. Says the Abarbanel, that is true as a rule, but it doesn't apply here, for a very simple reason. Why is it that we cannot count direct as a generality? Well, the Pasuk says we don't know exactly how these things work, but we have black and white from the Pasuk. V'lo yevahem negef bifgodosam, that there will not be a plague. And what that means is that there are certain very negative consequences that accrue to a direct count, and that's why it has to be indirect. Okay, that's what the Pasuk said. Says the Abarbanel, that's true generally. If you do something, there are natural negative consequences, even natural spiritual negative consequences, you have to take care of them. You have to be on guard. Except, there is something that can vouchsafe you from such negative consequences. We have a principle, shomer mitzvah, lo yeda davar ra. If you're doing a mitzvah, you don't have to worry about things like that. Now, of course, it's a sliding scale, because some things are significant enough that you have to worry, even if you're doing a mitzvah. True. The famous sugya in the Gemara in Psachim, that's where it all starts, in the first parak. If there's a pile of rubble and there may be chomets under there and there may also be scorpions under there, so think twice before you say shomer mitzvah lo yeda davar ra. Okay, that's really where the Gemara talks about it. There's a concept of shkia chazeka. If it's highly clear and imminent danger, so then shomer mitzvah. However, here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself said, count B'nai Yisrael. And in terms of a direct command, that's about as mitzvah as things get. Certainly we would say, Shomer mitzvah le'yedet avara. At the very least, says the Abarbanel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has told you generally that you can't count directly, here has told you that you can count directly. In the Talmudic parlance, HaPesha osar hu HaPesha hiter. The very same mouth that told you as a rule that you cannot do it, told you here you can. Now, what about the pasuk in Parshas Kisisa? I mean, doesn't that tell us that you can't count direct? Says the Abarbanel, the Chiddush. And that is that the pasuk in Kisisa that requires that you count indirectly is only true if you are not counting for a mitzvah. And there may be many reasons why a person would count. If you're counting for a mitzvah, as we see here, and certainly in this case, Shomer mitzvah lo yeda davar ra, you can count direct, have no fear. In Parshas Kisisa, and it's interesting because for the Abarbanel, the focus of the beginning of Kisisa is the taf. Kisisa, when you count the B'nai Yisrael, here's how to do it. When I tell you to count, there may be other ways. But if it's Kisisa, if when you are counting for whatever reason you want, but not as a result of a direct command from me, so then you need to be careful because so it's very interesting, according to the Abarbanel, this instance was in fact exceptional. It was vouchsafed by having the status of a mitzvah, of course. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself said to count. There was no need to count indirectly. Now, what's interesting is the Ramban, who will be the last Mefarish that we look at about on this matter this evening, the Ramban actually agrees with Rashi, which happens sometimes, but for different reasons. In other words, what brings the Ramban to agree with Rashi, namely that the count here was an indirect count, is another point. And that is, if we have a look at Pasuk Gimel, Miben Esrim Shana Vamala, from 20 years and up, Koyote Tzavab Yisrael, all those that go up to Tzavab Yisrael, Tifkedu Osam, Litzivosam, count them according to their groups, Atah ve'Aharon. Okay, so far nothing seems to be amiss. However, the Ramban asks a simple question. We've taken something for granted. We have translated the word tifgedu as counting. Now, clearly it means that. But the question is why? In other words, if someone asked us, what is the translation of the word pakad, I don't think we would say counting. We would probably say remembering, like Vashem pakad esara. You could also say
visiting
or appointing. Okay. Now, in a sense, what do all these things have in common? They're all ultimately either remembering or the product of remembering. Someone has been remembered and therefore he is appointed. Someone is visited, right, as a result of being remembered. And of course, the remembering itself. That's really what Pekida is. Pekida is the closest thing in Lashon HaKodesh to the word Zechira. Now, if that's true, then we need to understand why the term Pekudei will ever be used when it comes to counting. When you count what's in front of you. That's not called remembering. Even people that can't remember anything can just count, keep on going. So, it's a very basic question. What is the role of the term Pekida within the counting? The answer, says the Ramban, is Pekida does mean remembering. When do you remember something? When it's not in front of you. Something reminds you of it. The word Pekida is used with regards to counting the Jewish people because that is how they are counted. Not directly, but they are Nizkarim through something else. There's a proxy. There's an indirect way of counting so that when you see the Machtes HaShekel, you are mindful of another person. That's why Pekida finds its way into the lexicon for counting. And therefore, the Ramban comes to agree with Rashi that the counting was indirect, not because of Legul Golosan, as the Maskil HaDavid says, and not because we happen to know it anyway, because, as the Mizrahi says, but rather because the word Pekida is used. Pekida is a counting that involves remembering because you're not counting that which is in front of you. You're counting an entity and remembering that which you are meant to be counting. Now, if that's true, then this will lead us to a big problem. And that is, there is a very difficult episode that took place at the end of Sefer Shmuel Beis, where David actually counted the Bnei Yisrael, and there was a disaster. There was a plague, and it's a very complicated story, but the Psukim speak. And he took a census, and a plague broke out. That means, it must mean, that David did something wrong. But the question is, what did he do wrong? Why did a plague ensue? Aren't we meant to be somehow safeguarded against these things? Now, there are those who say, and in fact the Gemara itself says this, in Maseches Brachos and Daf Samach Beis, Amud Beis, that he actually counted them directly, meaning it was a head count, which of course for us is a disaster. And one now needs to know, why is it that David made such an elementary mistake? And that's why the Gemara talks about it and explains why David brought upon himself such a basic error.
You have reminded him not to remember.
Not about this, no. Per se, no. And ultimately, Yoav is the one who did the count for him. Now, why is there a problem if we just, armed with what we have, if we approach? Because the pasuk says, "Vayiten Yoav es mispar mifkad ha'am." Yoav presented the census, the mispar mifkad ha'am. Now, the reason why that expression is so significant for us is because we have already established in our parasha that whenever you see the concept of the term of pakod or pekida, you are talking about an indirect count. And therefore, as far as the Ramban is concerned, as he armed with this definition, as he moves into the end of Shmuel Beis, and we see Mispar Mifkat Ha'am, that means apparently that they were counted indirectly. And if that's the case, putting aside the Gemara for the time being, if that is the case, then what would the problem be? Apparently they were counted indirectly. So why was there still a plague? The answer of the Ramban to this question is very interesting. The Ramban says the reason why there was a plague, even though they were counted indirectly, is because there is no license to count the Jewish people, even indirectly, for no good reason. For no tzorech, for no purpose. In other words, counting the Bnei Yisrael is potentially a dangerous thing. It can be done, but there's two things that need to be in place. Number one, the way it is to be done is always indirect. And number two, there has to be just cause. There has to be legitimate reason. Now, the Ramban suggests that the census of David HaMelech at that time was not for any reason other than to see the extent of his kingdom, because he's the king, to see how many people are in his kingdom, but not with any utilitarian goal in mind. Now, that's quite a thing to say, and we should instantly know that this is not, the Ramban is not alone here, but he adduces a Medrash. This sort of thing, you rest easier if Chazal said it. Because the Medrash says, quoted by the Ramban, in Bamidbar Rabba, Rabbi Eliezer b'shem Rabbi Yossi ben Zamra Omar. So Rabbi Eliezer says, Kol zman shenimnu Yisrael litzorech, the Medrash, as long as the Jewish people were counted litzorech, for just purpose, lo chotzru, they were not depleted. But shelo litzorech, but if they were counted for no good reason, chosru, they were depleted. And the Medrash goes on to provide an example of each. Ezes man nimnu letzorech, when was the time that they were counted for good cause? Bimei Moshe uve degolim. In the time of Moshe, with the degolim, in the beginning of Parshas Bamidbar, uve chiluk haaretz, when Eretz Yisrael was apportioned out. Shelo letzorech, and when were they counted without just good cause? Bimei David. In the day of David. And therefore, the Medrash really is the basis for what the Ramban is saying, and the Medrash seems to be disputing the analysis of the Gemara. In other words, it's a machlokus, really different schools of thought within Chazal as to how to identify the problem in the time of David. Whereas the Gemara said it was counting direct, which shouldn't have been done. For the Ramban, it was to count shelo
letzorech. Should David not know that he mustn't count? Like, he just making a mistake?
Apparently.
Why is it that there should be a plague for any reason, whether it's direct or not direct? Why is the punishment a plague? Why is there a punishment?
It seems that we go back in a sense to Ayin Hara, right, which is a mysterious concept that we dealt with earlier in the year. But basically, in the sense when a person is singled out and without legitimate cause, so each person as they stand alone is kind of without the backing of the tzibur, let's say, which is normally a protective element. So that scrutiny is very often does not bode well for them. This comment of the Ramban in the beginning of Bamidbar, in a sense, moves beyond the scope of a perush on the Torah, because it is actually adduced as part of a halachic discussion that we're not going to get involved in a very detailed way, but we cannot mention the Ramban without it considering its implications, because when the question of a census came out, of course, here in the in the land of Israel. So, of course, it used to be true, and is still true, that most people who live in Israel are Jewish, and therefore a census of the citizens of Israel is really a count of a great segment of the Jewish people. So this sugya really came under the glass. And, of course, the question is, well, presumably it's indirect, because everyone fills in a census form. And according to the Ramban himself, actually everyone wrote down their name on a piece of paper and gave it to Moshe, which is it sounds like the equivalent of a census form. So let us call that indirect, even though even on that there is something of a discussion. But really the Ramban now remains an issue. Because according to the Ramban, counting indirect is not enough unless it's letzorech. And the burning question is, what constitutes letzorech? Does it mean letzorech mitzvah, specifically, and when we say mitzvah, we mean the type of mitzvah like the Jewish people are camping in the Degolim, etc., or that sort of thing? Or does it mean any tzorech, even let's say a utilitarian tzorech? One needs to know how many people are where, just in terms of municipal. Or would we say further that lemaisa, any tzorech in Eretz Yisrael, is l'tzorech mitzvah if it's yishuv Eretz Yisrael? So these are some of the discussions that come out of the Ramban, because it's the Ramban who laid down this extra requirement through his analysis of when it's okay and when it's not okay. It's not enough for it to be indirect. It has to also be Litzorech, and the issue of Litzorech is pages and pages have been written on it until our time. We should note, just in summation, that the Ramban is actually the polar opposite of the Abarbanel. Because the Abarbanel said that if it's Litzorech mitzvah, you don't need to count indirect. That's how the Abarbanel said that it was a direct count, because it's a mitzvah. The only requirement for indirect is if it's not a mitzvah. Whereas for the Ramban, it's not enough for it to be indirect. It also needs to be Litzorech, and possibly specifically Tzorech mitzvah. So these are some of the basic issues that come out really just from the first...
Now, you know, you have a minion. You want to know if you have a minion of people.
Yes.
It's Tzorech mitzvah.
Yes.
So you wouldn't have to.
You can count it by hand.
According to
the Abarbanel.
And we do it indirectly for a minion.
That's presumably the Ramban.
Be very careful.
Presumably that's the Ramban. According to the Ramban, two things have to be. It has to be Litzorech and also indirect. Even though, as we mentioned earlier in the year, when you count for a minion, it's rather different than counting a census. In other words, you just want to make sure there's ten people in the room. If there's 11, you don't care if there's 11. You stop at 10, actually. So as censuses go, it's rather modest in terms of its goals. As long as there's 10, you're fine. Okay.
Excuse me. Question. They brought the half a shekel with them from Mitzrayim. Would they get half a shekel from the desert?
So it depends really what half a shekel means. Gold and silver, they had plenty, for sure. Right? Because they left with...
But they were in the form of shekels. They took them from the horses and the chariots and everything.
Right, but they also left with Kesef and Zahav in terms of, you know, gold and silver itself. It's also not implausible that it's the same way that they made everything else. I think if they made a Mishkan, they were okay to make a Matzah Zashekel. It doesn't have to be minted with anyone's name on it. It just seems to be a certain weight.
And
before
you mentioned the Erev Rav, did they all convert to Judaism, the Erev Rav?
The Erev Rav converted to Judaism, yes.
Then why do we call them Erev Rav? Why don't we just say the Jews?
At the end of the... Well, in a sense, they didn't so much remain faithful to the Judaism they converted to. Right, but they were halachically Jewish. But they weren't in the count. Say again? Okay. Further in Perek Aleph, we come now to Pasuk Memtes. And let's again see a Rashi. There's not that much Rashi beneath the Psukim in Parshas Bamidbar, so we need to pay careful attention to the one that we see. Jewish people have been counted, and then we come to Pasuk Memtes. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Ach es mate Levi lo tifkod, but do not count the tribe of Levi within Bnei Yisrael. Rather, they're to be counted separately, which they were. Okay. Rashi comments and says, Ach es matei Levi lo tifkod. Do not count the Levi, and the end is amongst the Bnei Yisrael. Says Rashi, Kedai hu ligion shel melech lihios nimna levado. It is appropriate and fitting for the legion of the king to be counted by itself. In other words, here the Torah is saying Levi are special, they're unique, and that uniqueness is expressed in the fact that they are counted separately. Interestingly, this notion that the Levi being counted separately is an expression of their special status, of their exalted status, is actually borne out by the next pasuk, which begins to talk about the unique tasks of Shevet Levi. Hafked, appoint them over the Mishkan, the Al-Kol Kelav, etc. We started talking about a census, and before we know, we're talking about their job description. But the reason is that, in fact, that is it's the smichus of the psukim. That's really why the fact that they're being counted separately is because of all the special things that they do, which is really the first perush of Rashi. Legion Shemelech is counted alone. Secondly, says Rashi, Davar Acher, Tzofa HaKadosh Baruch Hu, She'asida La'amud Gezeira Al-Kol HaNimnin Mi-Ben Esrim Shana Ma'ala. Back again. There's a Gezeira pending that will happen on all those who are counted from 20 years and up. She'amusu Bamidbar. That's going to be the fallout of this count. Ultimately, this count will define the group that will stay in the Midbar, that will die in the Midbar. Amar. Al Yehu Elu Bichlal. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I don't want these to be in that count. Lefi Shem Sheli. Because they're mine. Shelotou Ba'egel. They didn't make a mistake in the Egel. Now, before we get to exactly what's different about Levi, we should note, just an important chat point that the Mizrahi points out, that when we talk about the Levim being counted separately, says the Mizrahi, it's not merely an issue of they were counted here and they were counted there. They're actually counted differently than the rest of Bnei Yisrael, as we know, which actually makes it impossible to combine them, because the Bnei Yisrael at large are counted from the age of 20 and upwards. Levim are counted from the age of 1 month and upwards, which means once that happens, you couldn't combine them. Those figures will not be real because you can't tally them. They're a different group. And ultimately, says Mizrahi, that's really what Rashi is talking about. It's not so much counting them here and them there. It's a different type of count which really sets them apart completely in terms of how they're counted. But the question is, of course, Rashi, we know that the Gezerah, the decree to die in the Midbar, was because of what happened in the Meraglim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, but Levi are different, and I don't want them to be in the count, because they didn't make a mistake in the Egel. Lo ta'u ba'egel. And the Mizrahi raises the question, we started talking about the Meraglim. We ended up talking about the Egel. It would have been more appropriate to say that because they are not involved in the Meraglim, so they do not receive the decree that's as a result of the Meraglim. And Rashi didn't talk about that. Rashi spoke about the fact that they weren't involved in the Egel. But dying in the Midbar is not connected to the Egel, it's connected to the Meraglim, so we seem to be crossing wires. What is the explanation of the Rashi? Says the Mizrahi. Number one, and this may sound a little bit upsetting, but it seems from Rashi, says Abarbanel, pardon me, says the Mizrahi, that Shevet Levi, perhaps, were involved in the Meraglim. In terms of the whole national disaster and complaining and etc., it seems that Rashi is not saying they weren't involved in that. Maybe they were. We don't know. Pasuk doesn't really say one way or the other. Now, if that's true, then it sounds a little bit unfair. Because if they're involved in the Meraglim, so that's what the Gezerah is about, so why should they not be part of that Gezerah, if they were involved? Says the Mizrahi, and this will sound like a Chiddush, because the Gezerah to die out in the Midbar was not purely a result of the Chet HaMeraglim. But actually, it was a cumulative result of the Chet, not only of the Egel, of the Meraglim, but also of the Chet HaEgel. The two together, Zeh v'Zeh Goreim, were what sealed the fate of the Bnei Yisrael. Now that sounds like a big Chiddush. We've never heard that before. When you read the Chet HaEgel, you don't hear anything about that. When you read Parshas HaMeraglim, you see the Gezerah. It sounds like it is a response purely for the Meraglim. Comes along the Mizrahi and says, no. And we're entitled to ask the Mizrahi, how do you know that? What makes you so bold as to say that? Says the Mizrahi, actually, my source in this matter is Rashi. Rashi on the Torah. In Parsha Shelach. And let's have a look at the Rashi there. It's in Perek Yudalet, Pasuk Lamed Gimel. And this is where the punishment is being described, that those that are guilty will stay in the Midbar and die out there. Uvneichem yihiyu ro'im b'midbar arba'im shana. Your sons will be wandering around in the wilderness for 40 years. V'nosu es nuseichem, they will bear through their weight, they will bear your unfaithfulness, atom pegrecha b'midbar, until you all die out in the Midbar. For 40 years. Rashi raises a very interesting question. Namely, they weren't there for 40 years. Because the Jewish people were all together in the Midbar for 40 years. But the sending of the Meraglim was already in the middle of the second year. So the maximum time you can say that they spent wandering around as a result of the Meraglim was 39 years. Actually 38 and a half. But rounded up to 39, but it's not 40. And Rashi makes the cheshbon. Because people only died when they were over 60. And that means that it will really need 40 years for anyone who was at the age of 20. So you need 40 years, but you only have 39 post the Meraglim. Says Rashi, Shana Rishona Haisa Bichlal. The first year of their stay in the Midbar is also part of the 40 years. It's not 40 without it. Now, even though it happened before, how can it be part of a punishment for something that didn't happen yet? That's a good shaila. Says Rashi, lefi shemisha asu es ha'egel also gezeira zoba machshava, because this was already in the wings from the time of the egel. Rashi uses a very enigmatic expression, also b'machshava, it was already considered. It's a suspended sentence. Elo, shehintim lahem achetismale sa'asam. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu waited until the measure was full. In other words, it's punishment worthy, but suspended. But when something comes, it will set in motion a punishment retroactively from the time of the original crime. And Rashi says, V'zeu shenemar. There is a very difficult pasuk in Parshas Kisisa. Moshe asked that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should not destroy Bnei Yisrael, and Hashem says, "Okay, I won't." And then Hashem says, "Lech necheyes ha'am, go lead them." Uviyom pakti, on the day of my pakti visitation, ufakadati aleim avonim, I will remember this as well. So actually, in one form or another, it really sounds like mefurish in the pasuk, that there's been some type of, it's suspended, but it can come back. B'yom pokti, on the day that I remember them. Says Rashi, what day is that? Now we actually know from the Gemara, it's a well-known statement of the Gemara, that actually any time the Jewish people are punished, there's something of the egel. That actually is a drasha based on this pasuk. B'yom pokti, if I remember them for anything bad, some of the egel will come in. It's a slow release. Because how else could we bear it? But Rashi says, al derech hapshat, uviyom pokti b'meraglim. If I ever visit them again, and of course the next major sin was the meraglim, then it's going to rebound back on this. Ufakadati alehem chatosom. Moreover, says Rashi, v'afkan ne'emar tisu es avonoseichem. Even in the meraglim it says, now you need to bear your sins, loshon rabim. Because it is the second of two. Shtei avonos. Shel egel, v'shel teluna. And that is why, says Rashi, v'choshev lehem b'minyan chayehem, mikdash shana kekula. That is why, the first year, ultimately, is also part of the 40 years. Says the Mizrahi, because that is true, so even should it be the case, that's why Rashi says that the Levim are counted separately, because when the Gezerah happens, they're already being moved to the side. Because when the Gezerah happens, it shouldn't happen to them. Shelotou ba'egel. Because even the Jewish people wouldn't have been punished for the Meraglim had they not erred at the Egel. And therefore the Levim, who really did not err at the Egel, they would not be punished. If the only thing they have, if they do not fall on both occasions, both the Egel and the Meraglim. Now, we should know that there are some Mefarshim who take great exception to this possibility that the Mizrahi posits that the Levim were involved in the Egel. And we don't know one way or the other, but that said, Rashi only excluded them from the Egel, not from the Meraglim. The Taz, Rabbi David Halevi, and the Divrei David, and the Maskil of David, bristle at this notion that the Levim were involved. Certainly there is a Medrash in Bezos HaBracha which says that they weren't involved in any of the Nisyonos. One could say that Rashi is not explaining based on that Medrash. But there's a Rashi itself, says the Maskil of David. Rashi himself seems to have excluded Levi from the Meraglim. Excluded them from the Meraglim. Where? Well, in the beginning of Sefer Devarim, when Moshe goes back over what happened with the Meraglim, so Moshe says, I took from you 12 men, one for each tribe. And Rashi says, Magid, which teaches us, Shelo Haya Shevet Levi Imohem. Levi was not amongst them. And that's Rashi himself. Now, the Taz also quotes that Rashi. Now, they've both made a certain presumption. And that is that when Rashi says that Levi wasn't involved, it means that as surely as he wasn't involved in sending one of the Meraglim, his tribe was not involved in anything that came back. Because of the representative of Levi not coming back to them, never ignited them, and therefore they remained outside of the melee that ensued. However, presumably the Mizrahi would respond to that, that as much as they did not have a representative sent, true, they didn't, because Levi doesn't have a really much of a holding land-wise in Israel, and therefore they didn't need to be sent, and certainly Levi at that time didn't really need that much confirmation. But that said, when the 12 came back, and 10 out of 12 said the bad news, it seems, as far as the Mizrahi is concerned, that even Shevet Levi got involved. We should mention here, with great reservation, but actually, the national response to the Meraglim is referred to with the words, Vayomer ish el achiv nitna rosh v'nashuva mitzrayma. Let's get back to Egypt. Now, we don't know who's ish and who's achiv, but there's only one other place in the Torah that this expression is used, Vayomer ish el achiv, and that is the sale of Yosef. And the ish and the achiv in that instance were Shimon and Levi. And the Maisi Hashem, Rabbi Lezer Ashkenazi, says, if we go back again to Sosum min ha-mefurash, we don't know who's ish, who's achiv, but that's an expression that we have experienced with in terms of Shimon and Levi. It sounds like perhaps in that part of it, which was the national response to it, even Levi were involved. That said, the Maskil of David and the Divrei David, so no, it can't be, Levi were not involved at all. But of course, if that is true, that Levi weren't involved at all in the Meraglim, so our question will come back on our Rashi. So why did Rashi say that Hashem doesn't want them counted because they weren't involved in the Egel? They're not involved in the Meraglim, that at the very least, even if it's the second of two, but it's the most immediate cause, and if they're clear, that alone should excuse them. Why does Rashi bring it back to the Egel, not the Meraglim? For the Mizrahi, we understand. It's only in the Egel that they were clear. But for the Maskil of David and the Divrei David, that they're clear on both counts, so why bring it back to the Egel? It says, the Divrei David, we see from here a chiddush. And that is, that as much as they were not involved with the Meraglim, which is clear to him that they weren't, but had they been involved in the Egel, then they would have suffered in the Meraglim also. Because if they would have been involved in the Egel, there would be nothing to separate from the rest of the Jewish people. And if they'd be counted with the Jewish people, then the fate that befalls the Jewish people befalls the entire community who's counted with them. Even Shevet Levi, who were not at fault. That's part of being part of the Tzibur in that way. And therefore, it was only thanks to the fact, it's not enough not to be involved in the Meraglim. Because not to be involved in the Meraglim means we didn't do anything wrong. But that doesn't make you distinct from the rest of the Jewish people in this fundamental way. It needs to be that the original division that took place at the time of the Egel, when everyone's going one way and Shevet Levi go another way, that's what allowed them to be given this special status, not counted together with the rest of the Jewish people, and then it made a difference that if they weren't involved in the Meraglim, so then they wouldn't suffer together with those who were counted. And this is a big chiddush. And I think that something else happened because of this. We find immediately after the parsha of the Meraglim, we have Parshas Korach. Now, Korach is a very complicated person. And he was surrounded by complicated people, and they all wanted something different. So let's forget about Korach just for a second, but let's look at Moshe's response to them. Because they come and they say, we want the Avodah, and that's what they said, right? Kikol Elokudum Kadoshim, we want the Avodah, why just Aaron? How does Moshe respond? So Moshe's response has two waves. The first wave is to the majority of those involved, and he deals with them very abruptly, and very briefly, to the point. They say, we want the Avodah. Moshe says, fine, come back tomorrow, we'll see. That's pretty much it. We'll do a test, and then you'll see. And then beyond that point, there's not really much reason for them to be anywhere near Moshe, because he's told them what to do, and we'll see you tomorrow. He doesn't remonstrate with them. He doesn't argue with them. You want the Avodah? You asked for it, you'll get it. Anything else? Any other business? No. Then Moshe turns to Korach and Bnei Levi. Vayomer Moshe el Korach Shimuna Bnei Levi. And the next two or three psukim are the longer response of Moshe to Levi, even though, actually, Levi was never really a distinct entity within Adas Korach. Adas Korach is multi-denominational. I mean, they have all sorts of shvatim there. And Moshe pretty much dismisses everyone and talks to Levi. Hamaat ki abdil elokei Yisrael eschem mikol. Right? Is it enough that you've been set aside in this way? Uvi kashtim gam kahuna. You've asked for too much. It's incorrect. It's not appropriate. And really, holding forth with Bnei Levi. How did that happen and why? The answer is very simple. Korach's claim that everyone should be part of the Avodah is a non-claim. Really, it's based on the past that will not come back. It certainly has not to date. Korach is saying many of them were Bechorim. Korach flies the flag for the Bechorim. Bechorim, do the Avodah. Give us back the Avodah. There's a very simple answer to that. You lost it. You don't always get back what you lost. You lost it at the Egel. You can't ignore the fact that that happened. And that really is the response. You still want it? Come back tomorrow. Try your best. But there's not much to talk about. But there is with Shevet Levi. Because Shevet Levi weren't involved in the Egel. And therefore, what's interesting is, and this is the sinister part of Korach, or one of them, is that he gathers all the Bechorim for popular support, but it's known that beyond really the first few seconds, none of them really are relevant. It's only Levi that's relevant, and that's why Moshe only addresses Shevet Levi. Because they do actually have a credible claim. And what's the claim? We were not involved in the Egel, so why should we suffer the consequences for the Egel? It's a good question. The answer to that question is that if you are completely disassociate yourself from life after the Egel, you're not part of the Jewish people at all. And that's unacceptable. But we certainly understand where they're coming from. And I think based on today's discussion, we can appreciate why the whole discussion got going now. Because the exclusion of Shevet Levi from the Gezerah of the Meraglim for them was confirmation that they were not impacted fundamentally by the Egel. Because if they were, they would have suffered the Gezerah along with the rest of Bnei Yisrael. But they've been put aside. Says Korach, he looks around. His fellow Levites, they look around. Everyone else had the Gezerah. We weren't counted with them. And we're not part of that Gezerah. Whether they did the Meraglim or didn't do the Meraglim, it's clear that it's clear to Rashi, it's clear to them. It comes back to the Egel. We've been given separate status. So if the Egel didn't affect us in that respect, maybe it shouldn't affect us in any respect. And that's the launch of Korach. Korach happens straight after Shelach. So I think that gives a certain perspective based on the understanding of this Rashi as to why Korach got moving there. And it's a very interesting question as to, we know so much about Levi and the Egel, not so much about the Meraglim, and these are part of the discussions that make up the understanding of this Rashi. We'll leave it over there. Thank you.
Sorry.